You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Actually, here's Matt Rothschild, because Maggie is out today starting the July 4th weekend early, as any sensible person would. I'm not as sensible as Maggie is, because I'm here and happy to be here to guest host for her today and happy to be with you on this eve of July 4th. There's certainly been a lot going on the last 24 hours budget-wise, and so we're going to dig into that in this first hour with Robert Craig of Citizen Action, and then in the second hour, we'll be joined by the one and only Jim Santel, one of Maggie's co-hosts, who has his own terrific show, Amicus Law Review, on the Civic Media Radio Network on the weekends. You can join the conversation right now by phone or text by calling 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. I want to hear from you as to what you think about Governor Evers signing the budget in the wee hours of the morning, or what just happened in the Capitol today in Washington, D.C., as Trump was able to ram through, finally, that big, hideous bill. So let's get into it. Robert Craig is the longtime executive director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin, now celebrating its 40th anniversary. Happy anniversary, Robert, and welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show.
Thank you on behalf of all of our leaders over all the decades. And it was great to see you, Matt. You've been in this a long time.
Yeah, as have you. How long have you been with Citizen Action?
I started in 2007. I've been executive director since 2009.
So you that's know, a nice get, chunk of time.
Know, you get handed these jobs during financial crises. So it was in the middle of the national financial collapse that also created a big crisis for Citizen Action in Wisconsin, as you would imagine.
Yeah, and you lived through that. I never, as an executive director for four decades, there were a couple things I didn't like about that job. One was the constant fundraising. I was a glorified telemarketer by night, and the grant writing, which isn't really writing, it's grant plotting, kind of. And then I also didn't like the HR stuff. I just wanted to write and talk. So now I get to kind of just talk with Civic Media here. I'm supposed to be retired, but I love what Civic Media is doing, so I'm happy to jump in here whenever I can, whenever a host needs a break. So tell me.
Matt, I was going to say, Matt, when you were heading up Progressive Magazine, my Aunt Eloise, now deceased, who lived in Bethesda, Maryland, always gave money to you because you personally called her. There was no other magazine where she heard from the head guy. So I have verification that you were a glorified telemarketer, but my Aunt Eloise really appreciated it.
Oh, that's good to hear. I remember I called not your aunt, but someone else too many times. The only thing she said to me was, "I'm so sick of your pestiferous calls." That word pestiferous kind of stuck in my brain forever. So I guess I didn't call her back again. But yeah, you can't be too proud to beg when you're running a progressive nonprofit, as you know, Robert Craig.
No, absolutely.
Well, let's dig into the Evers signing of the state budget. I want to get your immediate reaction to it.
Actually, there was something unprecedented that went on in Governor Evers' first two terms. This was his fourth budget. And I think people were taken aback when he settled the first budget without much of a fight in 2019 after declaring on badger care expansion that he would fight like hell. I know advocates, legislators, Democratic legislators were all stunned when he, with some line on vetoes, largely signed the Republican budget. This time, there's been a real push on this, both from legislators and from organized groups with real bases of members, Citizen Action of Wisconsin, the group I lead, Wisdom, the great faith-based group around the state, Wisconsin Public Education Network, which is a great group of education advocates. We Can, which is the child care workers that really made a big push this election. And WEAC, the very powerful and large teachers union, were pushing the governor to force a fight with the Republicans, bring the public into it by stating what his bottom lines were. And that between that and the fact that we have a very close large in the state Senate, he had a lot more leverage to get a better budget. In fact, they needed Democratic votes to pass this budget in the state Senate because they lost four Republican votes to this budget. And it's our collective view that he settled because he wanted to settle by the deadline, and it's not really a deadline. The budget can be done late. It's been done many times. That he didn't get as good deal as he could have. And I can go into the details, but not getting Badger Care expansion the last year, we can get the full federal funding, the 95% federal funding. Actually, for schools, even though there was some increase in special ed, having a 0% increase in general aid to public schools. That is, going back, experts at Wisconsin Public Education Network and WEAD can't find the previous budget that had zero, and with inflation, that's a cut. And this is after 18 years of underfunding. Child care, it's actually reduced from what we had before in the middle of a crisis where the previous child care program was inadequate. So I think those who are pushing the governor to stand and fight are disappointed with his decision and with the small number of Democrats in the Senate and the Assembly that supported this budget.
You mentioned there wasn't a deadline, and yet they hurried it through in the wee hours of the morning, saying that the deadline was the need to get this funding for hospitals that was going to vanish if they didn't sign it before Trump's budget sailed through today. Is that a legitimate reason or is it not?
It's not legitimate. I'll explain how this worked. This relates to the big, ugly bill we can talk right about. One of the ways states have funded Medicaid, because, you know, these kind of complexities of funding, disengage voters, is to have taxes on providers of health care that are then used to draw down more federal Medicaid money as the state part of the match, because it's a program that's state and federal funded. So the state puts up money in the federal government more than matches it. And so it's a loophole that they're closing in this new budget. So they want to do this before Trump signed his budget so they could get the last amount of cut they could get out of this provider tax loophole. Now, the hospitals could have gotten even more money with Badger Care expansion because we're leaving $1.5 billion of federal money on the table by not doing it. And then they would have been fulfilling their charitable purpose by trying to cover more people, not just increasing their own rates. Also, the Joint Finance Committee and Governor could have done that as a standalone bill, got that done, and kept going on the budget. There was no reason to ram through an inadequate budget just to appease the hospitals. And there's nothing in there that requires the hospitals to actually lower costs for patients, stay in any communities that they're not in now if they're withdrawing from rural areas and urban cores. And in fact, Mary Filkowski, I don't know if you've dealt with her, the senator from Wausau, very conservative senator, she switched her vote and voted no. And she said that this is just a great giveaway to the hospitals and it won't do anything to reduce the cost of healthcare. And I'm not often agreeing with Senator Filkowski, but she is correct about that. And the governor, when presented with that by media, called it BS, though he didn't abbreviate it, and said that our hospitals are working hard. So he was listening to the Hospital Association. You didn't need to do this quicker just for that. That could have been done separately in the time frame, and you could have also done Badger Care expansion, funded our schools, child care, shared revenue, other priorities. You know, mass transit, Matt, I don't know if you know this, and then headlines, was zeroed out, just like school aid. So it was that's a reduction. Milwaukee mass transit system, MCTS, is in deficit and will have to cut services from people who have, in the north side of Milwaukee, who have nowhere else to get transportation, who can't afford cars and won't be able to get to work. So there's a lot of reasons not to have settled for this budget.
I know there's a lot of anger on the progressive side. I'm seeing it on Facebook already from some progressive legislators and certainly from activists who wanted a better deal out of the budget or for the governor to threaten to veto the whole thing. Are you surprised at the vehemence on the progressive side here?
No, because that alignment I told you about with the organizing groups that have members across the state and unions, and AFT Wisconsin also was part of this coalition in addition to WEAC. We were also working with allies on the inside, so there was unprecedented communication. So we knew we had a shared position. We had all the rumors from legislators as to what was going on in the secret negotiations. and when the governor, and then yesterday, were completely coordinated. So a lot of the voices you're seeing in the media from progressive legislators that are critiquing this were in direct communication the whole time, and still are, with groups like Citizen Action, WE Act, Wisconsin Publication Education Network, Wisdom, the Child Care Advocates.
I mean, it is kind of shocking to me that there was no funding other than for special education for K through 12, given that Evers was school superintendent and, you know, acted like the education secretary, knows the education issue, had a tremendous amount of pressure from the grassroots at these hearings on the budget. Everyone showed up saying, we need more money, K through 12. What was in his mind there, do you think, that he didn't, you know, he made child care a bottom line, he didn't make public education a bottom line?
You know, it's hard to get into the soul of elected leaders, right? So it's sort of, and you do that, you know, historians, they try to guess, but they're not sure. They give hypotheses, right? He has been a disappointment in the year of the child, and given his background on education, it's been his brand not to smooth out the edges, to be bipartisan Tony, Uncle Tony kind of image, right? Very approachable, wears well. And this brand seems to, that the political brand seems to, in my opinion, getting in the way of why you become governor. That is for the policy, not for the successful politics. So he's the only, in the Marquette polling, he's not super popular, but he's the only statewide official above water, so to speak, more popular than unpopular. And is thinking about a third term. So this does seem to work as politics, because people are, you know, get concerned about all of the factional infighting, et cetera, as they see it. But in a polarized electorate, there's really, I mean, and political system with a lot of gerrymandering and safe districts, there's no other way to get things like make healthcare affordable, fund your schools adequately. So I think it's partly what the political advice he's getting and the want to be politically successful. Whether this is also a conflict aversion where he just doesn't like to have a knockdown drag out, that could be, but I don't want to go too far and try to be the amateur psychologist.
It may be a temperamental issue, though. You might be onto something there. I'm speaking with Robert Craig, who's the executive director over at Citizen Action. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild, and we'll be right back. I want to hear what you think about the governor signing this budget. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Hey, welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild. Maggie's out, starting her holiday early. And I'm joined by Robert Craig, longtime executive director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin. You can join our conversation at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. We're talking about the budget that Governor Evers signed in the wee hours of the morning. And we'll quickly, probably at the half hour, switch over to what happened in D.C. today, because it was quite a day there. To play devil's advocate for a second, Robert, I hear the governor say and others that this was a compromise budget. That's what politics is about. No one ever gets everything that they wanted. And basically, it was the best he could do or best he could get. How do you respond to that?
And that line of arguing is always available. And it's hard for average citizens to know what the elected leader could or could not have gotten. So one way to think about this is just how his campaign for the budget was run. So he did not include Democratic legislators in the negotiations until the very end. He brought the Senate Democrats in when it became clear that there weren't the votes to pass the budget with only Republican votes. By the way, we figured this for a couple months, so this was a knowable fact.
Wasn't a shocker.
Yeah, and they were kind of presented with a fait accompli. We've already negotiated all of this and we need you to sign off. So they weren't given a huge role, actually. So really, if you had had the analysis early that you had more leverage, you not only had the veto leverage, but the leverage of holding the decisive votes in the state Senate with the closer margins because of the fairer maps, then you could have played much more on offense. But even more than that, the reason executive, chief executives, governors, and presidents became very powerful in the 20th century, started in the Progressive Era, is because they learned how to use public opinion and mobilize it against the legislature. That's what Fighting Bob La Follette did. That was an innovation. That's what the Progressive Era presidents did. That's what FDR did, and so on. And he didn't do that. The way you do that is you lay bottom lines. You say, I want this amount of education funding. I want BadgerCare expansion. I want this much childcare funding. I want this on criminal justice, the popular things. And then you make it clear who is against it. So there is pressure on the Republican legislature. And on top of that, it creates a choice for them, because if they simply block the budget, people know why they did, and it increases Democratic accountability in the next election. And that is the playbook for increasing his leverage. He didn't do it, which is a clear sign of leaving power on the table and really wanting the brand, the outcome of being able to call it a bipartisan deal, more than wanting to get the best possible advances. So my case would be, if he used every piece of power on at his disposal, including the public, which is a huge power for the only person elected by all the voters, the governor or the president, then you could say, okay, maybe this is as much he could have done and it was a good deal. At this point, I think there's a lot of evidence to believe that he didn't fight very hard and that that wasn't the priority.
He's never been much of a fighter, in my opinion. I think he's done a good job in some ways, but he's a lover, not a fighter. He's a compromiser, not a battler. And at this stage of our politics, both here in Wisconsin and certainly nationally, there's a huge hunger for a fighter. We've got a couple texts I wanted to read, Robert Craig. Gary in Madison says, Evers plays softball while Republicans play hardball. Jake Troy in Mount Horeb says, I really hope that Governor Evers got assurances from Voss that the money would be spent instead of sitting in the joint finance like PFAS and other money from the last budget. Are you concerned about that latter possibility?
I would be. I think the second, I agree with both texts, but the second text raises a great point. I doubt there is much that was won that way. Here's how I would see it. You know, people have different temperaments who become leaders, right? They become leaders for some reason, usually some public purpose, at least at the beginning, maybe throughout, depending on the leader. But they can't choose the times they live in. And so maybe their temperament doesn't match up with what's needed at a certain time, and maybe it does, or maybe they need to adapt, right? There have been politicians in the history of American British politics, for example, that have evolved quickly seeing changes. And I think you're right. Right now, with a lot of the usual conventional means of power, right? Legislation, courts, the various norms that have governed Republican government, going by the wayside, the leadership requires not only fighting because you're against a maximalist opponent, MAGA Republicans, that use all of their power, including legitimate power. And in addition, you need to wield the public. In fact, authoritarian regimes, and we are in some in-between period, only lose out eventually if enough of the public is mobilized in non-peaceful resistance. You need to start doing that. And if you're not willing to do that kind of leadership, if it's not your temperament, you don't want to do it, then this is not the time for you to lead, actually.
In peaceful resistance. That's why those No Kings rallies were so great. And they were all over Wisconsin, not just in Madison and Milwaukee, but in dozens and dozens of small towns. I interviewed a 91-year-old woman in Stoughton who said this was the first protest she's ever been to in her life, but she was just so disgusted by what was going on. So that's why I think, you know, maybe Evers was right as a candidate to beat Walker. He was the best way to get Walker out of here, but he may not be the best fighter right now. And the times, as you say, requires a fighter at this point. I'm speaking with Dr. Robert Craig of Citizen Action Wisconsin. We're going to come back after a short break to talk about what happened in Washington, D.C. with Trump and his budget. Yes, getting through, unfortunately. We'll try to deal with that in the next half hour. This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Please call in at 855-752-4842 or text us there. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Maggie's starting her July 4th weekend early, and I'm Matt Rothschild. Grateful that you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You can join the conversation we're having by phone or by text by calling 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. What do you think of the budget that Governor Evers just signed? What do you think of Trump's budget that just passed a few hours ago? I'm joined still by Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin, enjoying its 40th anniversary this year. Before I get your reaction, Robert, I wanted to first of all say that the Democrats in the Wisconsin delegation did themselves well by speaking out against this bill so forcefully. Mark Pocan, Tammy Baldwin, and Gwen Moore. Gwen Moore had used one of my favorite lines from Shakespeare in her 1 minute that she got today to talk. So we're going to play that bit. Thank you, Jacob, for running that.
If you are a Republican with misgivings with the massive debt that this bill creates, or if you're worried about stripping 17 million Americans of health care access, I tell you that now is your moment. A coward dies 1,000 times before his death, but the valiant taste of death but once. Shakespeare. So vote your constituents, vote your conscience. This is how you will be remembered. Better to vote your conscience today and face an angry tweet than to have your legacy be one of equivocation and cowardice. By their deeds, you will know them. I urge all my colleagues to oppose debt, death, and hunger. Oppose this cruel legislation.
That's Representative Gwen Moore on the big hideous bill that passed today. I mean, she raises a really interesting point, Robert, and that is, why do politicians cast a legacy vote like this? How do they look themselves in the mirror? Don't you think upon retirement they're going to be filled with regret? Is it that important for them to keep their title? It just kind of amazes me. I mean, Murkowski was another example. I mean, it amazes me that not more politicians at some point say, it's not worth it to have this title and have this seat if I'm going to lose my integrity.
It looks like Senator Tom Tillis from North Carolina did that, but he had to announce his retirement basically when doing it because he was being threatened by President Trump with a primary and blown up.
But good on him for doing it. Yeah.
But he did it. But you had Jim Justice from West Virginia, Senator, you had Senator Josh Hawley basically say this was terrible, but they voted for it and they hope they want to fix it later.
And you also had our own obnoxious Senator Ron Johnson, who was claiming he was forever going to be opposed to this bill because it's not harsh enough. And of course, he collapsed, as he usually did, in Trump's loving arms.
Yeah, our national, I studied, collapsed like house of cards, and they were right about that. That was pretty quick after all of that fomenting and grandstanding. I do think it's interesting, just given how many members of the Republican House and Senate did not like this bill, how they all found their way to vote for it. And there's really little explanation other than blind ambition, right? And Gwen Moore nailed it with her, you know, implication of Jesus Christ with, by their deeds you will know them, right? A famous parable. And it's a parable about how you know who people really are and who is with us and who is not with us. And Jesus gave very simple advice, you know, don't listen to what they say or profess, look at their deeds, right? And this is the deed. So that's good advice outside of the religious, that for just life among humans.
Absolutely. I loved what Gwen Moore had to say there in 1 minute. That's about the best 1 minute you can get out of a public speaker, or out of a politician. I'm sorry to interrupt. I want to grab texters and then a phone call. And you can join the conversation, 855-752-4842. I'm Matt Rothschild, sitting in here for Maggie Dawn with Dr. Robert Craig of Citizen Action. Dana in La Crosse said, nobody is talking about this, but the big, so-called big, beautiful bill is just Trump and his fifth grade vocabulary trying to steal Build Back Better from Biden. It's as simple as that. And then we have Sue in Franklin saying, probably good that Maggie's on vacation today. Her hair would be on fire for sure. No doubt about that. Sue concludes, this is a sad day for America. And now we have Joe from Madison on the line. I always like getting Joe's phone calls. Joe, what's on your mind?
A great discussion with your guest today. Really, really important. Two points that I would make. First off, in terms of, number one, run that clip from Gwen Moore again and again and again. That is the most succinct statement of, you know, people rising to the moment or people running to the underneath their desk and hiding. And I think we haven't seen the someone making that step of coming forward in the way that they could. I would add to this discussion, there was a little blurb, and this just tells you something about where a lot of these Republicans are, because there was this person posted, look, we have 17 million people that just lost health care, 18 million kids just lost school meals, and 3 million Americans just lost food assistance. And the congressman from the 3rd District of Wisconsin, Derek Van Orden, replied to that, yes, with a big exclamation. What does that say about that person? You know, what does that say about who you are and what you are? I mean, why that this would be something that you would celebrate, that children don't have food that they need, that people have lost health care, and the tumbling down that we all know that happens when people lose their health care. We're talking medical bankruptcies. We're talking all sorts of awful things resulting from not being able to have adequate health care. So I just, you had said before, and I think this is maybe worth part of the discussion too, you had said there's something about people who can rise to the moment. And I'm just wondering who on the horizon is there. You were expressing kind of frustrations with Governor Evers that he didn't push harder on more things. Who do you see on the horizon, whether it be, on the national side or on the state side, that you think would be the kind of person that could get in there and make a difference, open people's hearts and be strong and be open? I don't know. I'd be curious to hear what you guys have to say, because this really is a time where somebody could rise to the occasion and say, this isn't right. We can't.
Thanks so much, Joy. Joe, that's just tremendous insight and also a really good question. On the Derek Van Orden, I mean, he's a sick individual. He is a sadistic individual. That comment of his where he's dismissing all those 17 million who are going to lose health care, 18 million who are going to lose school lunches, 3 million who are going to lose food stamps, kids. I mean, to say yes to that is really disgusting and revolting. But there is an element of sadism in this whole Trump administration that we shouldn't ignore. I mean, that was Kristi Noem going down to that grotesque prison in El Salvador in front of the half-naked prisoners. That's, alligator Alcatraz, what they're calling now, down in the Everglades. And it's a part of fascism, this appeal to sadism. And so we shouldn't ignore it. And I'm glad you brought up Derek Van Orden's own little bit of it. As to who will rise to the occasion, I'm interested to hear what Dr. Robert Craig says. Certainly on the national level, AOC is doing that and Bernie's doing that. But I'm sure there are others, and Gwen Moore's doing that too. Mark Pocan was doing that here. As to who's going to, lead the ramparts or run us to the ramparts, what do you say, Robert?
Yeah, and let me speak to Van Orden and then to that question, because happy to get into the nuts and bolts of the healthcare piece. We have a lot of members in Van Orden's district, Congressional District 3. Our chapter is called Organizing Co-ops. We have one in the Driftless area around La Crosse and one in Eau Claire, northwest of Wisconsin, and put tremendous pressure on, had a ton of town hall meetings on Medicaid and what the cuts would mean, not just in Eau Claire and La Crosse, but in a lot of the rural areas, your Rice Lakes, your St. Croix Falls, your Adamses, and had actions in front of Van Orden's office. Van Orden wouldn't meet with his constituents.
Shocking.
At all. And in fact, claimed that there were credible threats against the safety of his family, that upon inspection don't look that credible. But honestly, he's up for re-election. There has to be accountability. But I was going to do a quote from him that I had saved, but that your caller, Joe, did great. So we can just, I think, believe you, Matt, Joe, and I. On leaders, this becomes this punditry. It becomes like deciding who's the next player in the Brewers farm system that's going to be a star, right? I think that movements create leaders, not the other way around. In our society, we have it in reverse. So the movement that is pushing, the grassroots movement, on national Democrats, not just to stay in a safe lane, but to do what is actually necessary to stop authoritarian overreach by Trump, and the push on Governor Evers to actually mobilize public aid and fight, building that kind of constituency and the kind of callers and texts we've had to this show today, Matt, that is the kind of thing that is going to help produce the leader. And you can't just look at it based on their record. I agree, Bernie Sanders and AOC have done a great job, doing a great job. But I would say that there are some leaders who will rise to the occasion who may not have seemed like that leader before. And that's been true throughout throughout the history of democracy. But we absolutely need to keep pushing. And I believe that we need that kind of leader to start throwing their hat in the ring. It's going to starts local. It starts at things like state assembly and state senate primaries, and maybe and primaries probably for the governorship, because the governorship is up, for example. The presidential primaries further off, and you need to have much more status in order to be. But you see a lot of people making plays. AOC, Chris Murphy is a senator who used to be a moderate, now has moved very much into a resistance wing, and there are others who are doing that.
Yeah, those are some good names to throw around. We've got a call from Mike from Muscadet. Mike, what's on your mind?
Yeah, you guys have a tendency to quote the Bible when it suits your needs. But, you know, God hates the hands that shed innocent blood when it comes to abortion. So you guys are nothing but hypocrites.
Well, Mike,
I will just say there's no scriptural basis for the anti-abortion position. In fact, the best biblical scholarship tells us that the practice in Jesus's time was at quickening, which is about 6 months. So you can believe the version of the Bible people told you. You can't point to the spot in the Bible because it isn't there.
Well, thanks, Robert. You're a better biblical scholar than I am. I wasn't going to be able to handle that that well. So it's always great to have you right here, being able to quote the scripture, or at least quote what's in the scripture and what's not in the scripture, because it is so often that we are given these alleged passages from the Bible or commandments from the Bible that actually, when you look at it, it's not really there. And
true
also
confession.
Our friend, I beg your pardon, go ahead.
My grandfather, who I was close to, was a theologian.
Well, there you
go. I just did a paper on his theology for the 30th anniversary of his death. So I'm actually... I'm actually better versed than usual because I read a lot of theology last year to write the paper.
Well, it was a great answer you gave, and that must have been an interesting paper to write. Email it to me. I'd love to take a look.
Oh, I'd love to. I will.
Yeah. We're going to be back in just a second. You're not going to want to miss the quotes we have from Hakeem Jeffries, who gave one of the most impassioned speeches on the House floor that I've ever seen. So we'll be right back with that on the Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show all across the Civic Media Radio Network. Maggie's starting her July 4th weekend early. I'm Matt Rothschild. Grateful that you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and you can join our conversation by phone or by text by calling 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Call or text, and we'll try to get you on. I'm here with Robert Craig, the executive director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin, celebrating its 40th anniversary. And Robert's been there for a long time. Not all 40 years, but a lot of them. We want to talk a little bit more about what happened in Washington, D.C. today with the big, hideous bill. I think the best way to get back into this is listening to the amazing speech that Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries gave from the well of the House, speaking for more than 8 hours, a record. Let's play a little bit of his great conclusion, Jacob.
That civil rights movement, we can learn a lot from it. Started December of 1955. And Rosa Parks sat down on that bus so that all of us could have the courage to stand up
That's right.
Wasn't an easy struggle. All the odds were stacked against these civil rights heroes and foot soldiers. And during the early days of the movement, a difficult part of the movement, Dr. King, after they've been targeted, arrested, beaten, harassed by the authorities, he traveled to Brooklyn, New York. And spoke at the Concord Baptist Church. I think it was in March of 1956. And he said to a group of people of every race, every religion, every life experience, the Concord Baptist Church in Bedford-Stuyvesant, said to them, no matter what the odds, we've got to press on.
Press on. Press on.
Dr. King said that if you can't fly, run.
That's right.
If you can't run, walk.
That's right.
If you can't walk, crawl. But at all times, press on.
Press on.
And keep pressing. And so as I take my seat, I just want to say to the American people that no matter what the outcome is on this singular day, we're going to press on. We're going to press on. We're going to press on. We're going to press on for our children, yes. Press on for our seniors,
yes.
Press on for our veterans,
yes.
Press on for our unions,
yes.
Press on for our farmers,
yes.
Press on for our dreamers,
yes.
Press on for working class Americans,
yes.
Press on for the middle class,
yes.
Press on for all who aspire to be part of the middle class,
yes.
Press on for the poor,
yes.
Press on for the sick,
yes.
Press on for the afflicted,
yes.
Press on for the least.
Press
on for the lost.
Press
on for the left behind.
Press
on for the rule of law.
Press
on for the American way of life.
Press
on for democracy.
We're
going to press on until victory is won. I yield back.
So that was the amazing speech this noontime afternoon, I guess. Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, who spoke for more than 8 hours today. I listened to that live. I didn't listen to all 8 hours, but I caught the ending and I caught a lot of what he was talking about, including all the good amendments the Democrats had proposed for really common sense, decent amendments to this horrible bill that Republicans just dismayed, got rid of out of hand. So, Robert Craig, how should people press on?
Well, that was a tremendous ending to after speaking 8 hours. So, and my PhD is in rhetoric, so that was fantastic. But I would say that a lot of times movements are broken down just into dramatic parts, like, you know, some of the great moments with MLK Jr. at the front, right? But what's missed is the years of hard organizing and individual people deciding to take risks and get involved in the dark heart of Mississippi and the Mississippi Delta, which was where it was terrorist state, where stepping out, trying to register a vote could get you killed or fired or lose all your livelihood, evicted, et cetera. People need to join. The atrophy of democracy is not enough people being involved. And joining means working together in groups with people to make change. Don't just give money to politicians or just engage on Facebook or other social media. You need to join groups like Citizen Action Wisconsin. If you're a teacher, get active in your union, for example. But ultimately, it's that all that spade work that's less glamorous and isn't even visible is underneath the tension most of the time that makes the breakthroughs possible. And the only way to save democracy is to rebuild it, and the muscle of democracy is more people being involved, and that's what we've lost. We have a lot of great people involved, but we need a lot more of them. Interesting, no authoritarian state in world history has stood up to 3.5% of its electorate of the people being organized. And so we don't need everyone, but we need that core of people to be heavily involved.
Absolutely. Dr. Robert Craig of Citizen Action Wisconsin, thanks so much for joining me on the Maggie Dawn Show. And I'm going to be right back with Jim Santel of Amicus, a law review. Please stay tuned.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.